Hello, and welcome to a special edition of the Race Department podcast. Paul, Jeffrey and I decided that we were going to talk about the recent Slightly Mad Studios purchase by Codemasters because we think it's a rather big development. So Paul and I, just by ourselves, in the virtual RD studio, talking about the recent announcement. So good evening, Paul.
Good evening, Mr. Paul Glover. Good evening, podcast listeners of the world. How are we all doing? How are you doing? You're right.
I'm doing very well, thank you, buddy. Yourself?
Yes, absolutely bouncing off walls. It's Monday evening as we record, and a week of opportunity lies in wait.
Indeed, a week since we last recorded, which we did episode number 18, which at that time we had said that was going to be the last one of 2019. But then this news came out, so I think it's a pretty big thing to talk about. So just the headlines, really, to start off with. The British game development studio Codemasters have purchased Slightly Mad Studios in a $30 million deal that could raise to a potential $67 million over a three-year period. Slightly Mad Studios online marketing director Nathan Bell has been on social media in recent weeks, teasing an enormous announcement for the studio, and we found out what that is. If you don't know, Slightly Mad Studios are the team behind the Project Cars franchise. Paul, I've not seen any rumours around this, and in other industries, if you talk about sport as well, especially football, there's always a lot of rumours going around. But I didn't get a whiff of this.
No, caught me completely by surprise. Really big. I mean, it's massive. It's a huge piece of news for sim racing, which is obviously why we thought it worth having a chit-chat and another quick podcast. Because Slightly Mad Studios, as you say, they've done the Project Cars 1, Project Cars 2 franchise. They've got a Hollywood blockbuster game, which we believe is going to be...
Fast and Furious?
Yes,
is that
the
right?
Fast and Furious one, which will be obviously an arcade Nitros story-driven game, I would imagine. They've got the third installment to Project Cars, which is... running under the Project Cars Revolution working title. And of course, they've got some other IP out there like the Red Bull Air Race and the Need for Speed. It's not Need for Speed, is it? What's the other one?
No, not doing? Need for Speed. I'm not sure
the
what that
Shift,
one is.
The Shift. Is it Shift? I can't quite remember now.
Codemasters do, you mean Shift, don't
yeah.
they?
Slightly Mad did another one, but it's just gone straight out of my mind. But anyway, by the by, so they're a huge company. They've had a massive commercial success with P Cars 1 and P Cars 2, so there's a lot of money sloshing around and a lot of prestige there. And then obviously Codemasters are a AAA studio as well. They've got and had the Formula 1 license for 10 years and for pretty much forever and a day in the future as well, lockdown. And the dirt games, of course, and a couple of arcade races. So it's two really Goliath development studios joining forces or being absorbed by the other. And that's got some really interesting knock-on effects for how does that affect Automobile Ballista 2, who have licensed Slightly Mad Studios' game engine for their new title, and what's it mean for the future of both, well, F1 and the Project Cars franchise. So some really, I can't overstate this enough, massive, massive news.
Yeah, it's huge news. Yeah, I mean, just go back to your comments before about what games they've made. Need for Speed Shift. Shift 2, and they also did a test drive Ferrari Racing Legends before
yes,
they then
yeah.
Before they did Project Cars in 2015. So,
and obviously they were also a lot of the staff that worked for SMS made up Bizarre Creations and also a little bit of the original Simbin team for the GTR and GTR2 games, so there's a little bit of heritage in there as well, although you couldn't really tell if you looked at any games they released after that, but that's another conversation topic for another day. So, some real big names joining together, but I'm curious, Paul, don't know about you, do you think this is going to have, is this a market share grab, or do you think this is going to have a tangible impact on development of the two games?
That's a really good question. That could go either way. If you look at both studios, some would say they're not neither of them produce sim racing games.
No, I'd agree with that completely. Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, we've talked about the whole sim racing to arcade, you know, divide quite a lot in the small amount of podcasts that we've released. But with Codemasters, obviously, you've got Grid, Dirt Rally 2, Grid Autosport, even a game called Onrush. Then you've got the F1 series that you mentioned.
And they've also branched out a lot into the mobile gaming marketplace, which is massive and a big money spinner. And I think, if I remember correctly, one game we forgot to mention was Project Cars Go, which is going to be the mobile spin-off of the Project Cars franchise.
Yeah, I recently saw that myself. Yeah,
that makes you wonder, doesn't it? If there's some kind of... We're looking at console and market saturation a little bit here with the move.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, and obviously you've got the games where we've talked about Toka Race Driver in the past. Codemasters have got quite a bit of heritage. You know, we're talking back in the 90s, aren't we?
With like Micro Machines, don't forget that.
Yeah, Colin McRae Rally, for instance. Even, I mean, early 2012 or late 2012, they released F1 Race Stars, you know, so they've got a bit of a track record of... having proper arcade games and having kind of an arcade sim games, which you could argue is what Slightly Mad Studios are all about.
Yeah.
Is it a land grab? That's a really good question. Or are they looking at, you know, the engine element for Slightly Mad Studios, you know, Slightly Mad Studios. Because if we not forget, I mean, one of the things I immediately thought about was Auto Ballista 2, because they've signed up the engine. You know, so what does that mean? Does that mean that...
That's possibly for the kind of audience that listens. I'm assuming the audience that listens to our podcasts are predominantly the audience that comes to race department. So I think you hit the nail on the head, dude, is that that's probably going to be the most interesting topic for our listeners and readers, is what impact does it have on Autumn and Ballista 2? Because I don't think I'm being unfair to say that AMS2 is arguably one of the most anticipated racing sims of the last decade. I think the job that Riser Studios did with the original Autumn and Ballista, or AMS for easier ways of saying it, was fantastic. They really milked the G-Motor engine for everything it's worth and more. And there's a lot of, I don't know, trepidation maybe from the community, myself included. I'm still not convinced, as I mentioned in Season 1, episode 18 podcast. Please do check it out at your podcast list playing place of
someone,
choice.
Someone has posted on the podcast thread about your comments there. Yeah, I thought you might have seen that.
It made me chuckle, but then not long after we went live, they also, Riser Studios did, released a new roadmap with a video with a Formula V12, which I'm not convinced by at all. But again, that's another conversation.
For now. But
so we all know that Riser can do an absolutely phenomenal job. And I think personally, I've got more faith in Riser Studios than any other sim developer to produce a product that appeals to me, i.e. a heavy-duty sim. But taking on the SMS engine, which is not one that I've been bowled over with, I'm not convinced at all by the Project Cars games. There's been a bit of worry, I think, a little bit from the community of how much of the DNA from the Project Cars franchise is going to be prevalent in AMS2. Can Riser do enough in the time they've got to bring a more heavily simulation-focused title to the table than the Project Cars games was? And then now, like you say, with this purchase of SMS with Codemasters, which are not renowned for being a heavy simulation development studio, and obviously nobody here is privy to the contractual situation between the three parties. So there's a massive curiosity there that will increased funds from Codemasters enhance the core SMS engine, which will benefit and roll down to Riser? Will Riser be feeding in the improvements for the two studios to take on board? Will the Ergo engine for Codemasters remain as the one of choice and SMS get dropped, or vice versa? There's a whole bucket load of possibilities on this one, which is scary and exciting, I think.
Yeah, so while you were talking there, I just went on the old interweb, you know, that thing where you can surf web pages. I think you're familiar with it.
The magic window that sits in front of my steering wheel.
Yeah, that one, yeah. And I've just read in a post from Renato at Riser, He's obviously, some people are asking questions around this announcement, and it kind of responded the response that I would expect. So, you know, he's come in and said, look, a company acquiring another doesn't interfere with existing license agreements for the latter's IP. Such deals will be assessed during due diligence and rolled up with the other assets and liabilities of the company being bought. What he does allude to is that he's unsure how that may affect the relationship, because they've been working very, very closely with Slightly Mad Studios. So he's unsure as to, you know, will that continue to be that same relationship now, or will they start working with Codemasters? I mean, I suspect from a short term, over the next few months, that you know, that wouldn't change. It just wouldn't make any sense to kind of rock that boat.
Yeah,
especially
I'd agree with
the fact that they bought that engine, and you want them to, you know, produce a product that's going to benefit SMS, you know, isn't it?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah,
if
that sells, I don't know whether, you know, as part of the contract, if Razer sell X amount of games, then SMS will probably make more money based on that.
I would assume so. That's how these things tend to work, isn't it? That there's a certain percentage of the selling company or the leasing company reap some level of financial benefit from success of the product that's licensing their tech. I would assume that's how I tend to understand these things going. So for SMS's sake, of course, the more units that Razer shift, theoretically, I would assume, based on having no insider knowledge, that's going to bring some pennies into the door, which is a good thing.
But he said, you know, you never know, they could introduce us to more contacts in the industry, you know, which allows them to get better licenses and tracks and things like that. So, you know, it's all hypothetical. Is that hypothetical? Yeah, that's right, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. It's late, everybody. We've both been at work all day.
Yeah. Is that a word? You know, so, you know, I can't imagine, for Renato, he doesn't know. He's just trying to make everyone else feel comfortable with those that got the questions, you know, the people like yourself that have backed AMS2 and so forth. But yeah, it's an interesting deal.
And it's kind of scary, don't you think, that level of uncertainty at this point? I mean, I know, I'm sure.
No, I don't think it's unusual. No, especially when you know, because what you have to do is that when a business is purchased, you have to legally announce it, you know, at a certain point. You've got employees to think about.
1,001 NDAs that you've got to sit
behind.
Yeah,
exactly. So, and then one sec, and then you kind of sometimes those announcements are made before all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed.
There's all the stock exchange stuff as well. I don't know if they listed Codemasters. I would imagine they are. And yeah, there's a lot of legalities to jump through. But what one of the questions it begs for me is, and that's something that's not been made clear in the announcement at this stage, whether it's known or not, I don't know. Will SMS and Codemasters continue to operate as separate entities but with shared crossover? Or will one or the other of those companies fully merge into the other and become just a single development studio underneath a shared name? Because that'd be interesting. For there's obviously knock-on effects with the Formula One series and the ongoing IP that SMS are developing. So that's another curiosity, because obviously Ultimate Ballista 2 is scheduled, as we speak, to come out in March, being knocked back to March 2020. And there's a two-year development cycle on top of that one. So whether that gets wrapped up in this deal and any improvements that come to the engine from the Codemasters/SMS side are accessible to Razer, or whether that can run its course and that terminates any future deals they may have for an AMS3 or another licensed game from the Brazilian side. That's a curious question that remains unanswered. So I'm looking forward to seeing what that means going forward.
Yeah, that's an interesting question, though. Renato has said that, you know, they've got they have the source code to continue developing the engine over
so
the
AMS2
large scale.
That kind of makes me think then that they get that engine as it sits in that moment in history.
Yeah.
And it's 50-50 whether they'll get any improvements. Well, it's 50-50 whether SMS/Codemasters make any improvements. to the engine, or whether they just get what they've got at that time and they turn it into what. Because don't forget, let's think about the famous Image Space Incorporated G-Motor engine. That powers, even though they're very different games, completely unrelated to each other, that powers Race Room, R-Factor 1, the G-Motor 2.5 powers R-Factor 2. The original Ultima Ballista is the first G-Motor engine. Yeah, it's got some DNA in pretty much everything that you've driven, but they're licensed it at that moment in time, like Race Room, for example, and turned it into something completely different.
Yeah, exactly. And I think this is here. So Renato's gone. It's worth also clarifying, we're not supposed to get all developments SMS were making to the engine since P-Cars 2. This is not like a licensing Unreal or Unity, which are businesses dedicated to licensing technology to third parties and thus supply all licensees with latest developments. When licensing from a studio like ISI or SMS, one typically gets the code base at a given stage and it takes its own on its own separate tangent.
Now that's interesting.
And we are entitled to continue development from that point onward, or nor in fact are they to ours unless an additional agreement is made for these developments.
Do you know, that's really excellent. That is very awesome. Because that's exactly what... Because essentially, and I'm being massively unfair, Ultima Ballista 1 started out life as R-Factor 1.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
1,000
times better than R-Factor 1 finished out. So actually, that inspires a bit of confidence in me, does that? That, yeah, you've got the pretty graphics of SMS's engine, the Madness engine. You've got the enhanced tyre model that's just not being utilised properly. And you've got a whole bunch of bugs. But if they've got it from that moment in time, then they can turn that into the product they want to. So that, to be honest, actually, that's really reassuring for me.
That reassures you the videos you've been watching, doesn't it?
Well, I don't like where it's at the moment.
Yeah, but then you could say the same about where AMS 1 was when it originally was using the R-Factor
codes. Yeah, the GameStop car. I said it in the last podcast, and I'll say it again for those that haven't listened to it.
But if you haven't listened to it, why haven't you listened to it?
Exactly. Go listen to it. It's a fantastic,
what's wrong with you?
It's a fantastic audio experience. It's milkshake for the ears. So please do go and enjoy that.
Milkshake for the ears.
Do you like that? You can use that. You can coin that phrase if you wish.
Honestly, you can keep that one.
Yeah. Are you telling me that mental picture of milkshake in the ears is not what you're looking for?
Yeah, no, it's not. No, not at all. Anyway,
so
I've just got an image of somebody sticking a straw in my ear and sucking out the milkshake. That's just weird. Right. that's not what you were going for, right?
That, it really isn't. No, that does not sum up my thoughts on episode 18 at all. But, but it's the only one I can think of quickly off the top of my head that wasn't like a little bit inappropriate for family listening.
We can do inappropriate. It's not the end of the world.
It's a special edition.
We love innuendos. Yeah, who doesn't? So yeah, I think that, you know, those comments which, you know, Renato made on Friday at the Razer Studios forum, you know, to people asking the same question that we just asked at the beginning of this recording. So, you know, and I think that just how that, you know, but it also may, as we say, open up doors for them. And it may, for instance, Codemasters might be interested in what they're doing with the engine, whether they want to take it down a different route. But I can imagine that Razer wouldn't necessarily be interested in that, because that's kind of treading on their toes in that respect, because they're after the hardcore sim racers.
Yeah, exactly. They're different markets, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Very much,
you know, I can't imagine that Razer's thinking, we're going to release this game on the Xbox and the PlayStation.
Do you know, I was just going to say that, actually. At the moment, Codemasters have a very, very strong fan base on console, as
yes,
the Slightly Mad with the Project Cars. So there's no indication that AMS 2 is looking for the console market. Although, of course, if they've got the Madness engine, then theoretically they've got the same components that the Slightly Mad Studios team had before they went to console. So it's not out of the question, certainly isn't. But as you rightly say, Razer Studios go out of their way to get the minutiae detail of the simulation as much as possible, where it's you could argue the more accessible titles from Codies and Madness. So does lead me to a question, though, Paul, which is may not be affected, but it's worth bringing up. Razer and Ultima Ballista 1 and obviously Ultima Ballista 2 have a selection of Formula cars that look suspiciously like Formula 1 cars from different eras. I'll be interested to see if there's any conflict there with obviously Codemasters, who've got the official Formula One license, whether there's any perceived not conflict but perceived rivalry there, whether that's still going to fly in light of the new deal.
If anybody had any issues with that, it would have been Formula One.
Yeah,
not
Formula One management.
Yeah, it'd be more around the licensing, not the fact that it potentially is conflicting the game. And I think you've got to remember is that the relationship is literally just the engine, which they have the engine. They can't suddenly stop them from using the engine. The deal's been signed.
Just makes it an uncomfortable. Not so much stopping them from using content already done, but does that make that an uncomfortable bedfellow going forward if you start deciding to do let's do a 1971 Formula Classic or something like that. They've got all the eras pretty much. A 1950 Formula Classic or something, which is, it's not a one-to-one copy of a Formula One car, but it's based on the regulations of the era. So be interesting to see if that has any rollover consequence further down the line. I can't see, but the thing is, I think you summed it up at the beginning. There's a lot of unanswered questions. A lot of, in the public anyway, I'm sure behind closed doors, these conversations are already intensely being had, but there's a lot of uncertainty there, which, you know us sim racers, throw a bit of uncertainty in the hat and we will make ourselves a meal. So it'll be interesting to keep a tab on that one, I think, going forward. Looking forward to finding out what this means.
Yeah, like you say, I mean, was it Ian Bell came out a few months ago, because we spoke about it on a previous episode of the podcast, where he was talking about the next release of Project Cars series, you know, that it was going to be, you know, amazing. I can't remember the words that he used.
300% better already.
Yeah, that was something. Project Cars 2. Yeah. I mean, and what we're kind of like, well, how do you quantify that? And I'm not sure if he, you know, at that point was having early discussions with Codemasters around that. We're not privy to that information, or whether that was just Ian Bell being Ian Bell, and putting out, you know,
good marketer, yeah, exactly. Good headline grabber,
selling his next game. But it leads me on though, dude.
Why has this deal taken place? If they're two on paper, from a distance, successful studios that have got their own thing going. I mean, as you say, Codemasters have got millions, well, not millions, let's not be dramatic, Paul. They've got numerous titles out there that have been very, very successful for the most part. Slightly Mad have got financially popular anyway, if not playable, franchise racing games and some new IP coming. Why now? Why sell? That's an interesting question.
Things aren't as rosy as one studio would like to make out.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously we have absolutely no insight into the background of these things, but it just kind of, I think, I was surprised initially that, oh, hello, this is a piece of news I wasn't expecting. But then the more that you get to sit back and think about it, the more that you think, why are we at this point? It could be a million things. Like you say, it could be a financial consideration to secure the future. It could be a market grab. Or maybe SMS are thinking of going down a different route somewhere down the line and doing something a little bit different, and a new game engine. I mean, Project Cars 1 engine, now that's not the newest engine in the world, although it is shiny and spangly. There's potential that maybe they're looking at doing something different entirely.
Yeah, it's hard to kind of nail, like you say, where this has all come from, in the sense, like, I wonder whether, because you can ease, you know, they get all these people online that, you know, promote their, you know, look at my life, blah, blah, blah. But when you get behind the kind of the curtain, actually life isn't so great. And you sometimes you get that with businesses, you know, they portray one thing. You know, I'm not necessarily privy to the sales numbers for Project Cars 2. Based on the heavy, heavy discounts that you see on Steam.
Yeah, that's true. Always skews things, doesn't it?
You know, like, you just don't know, like, you know, if a game is that good. Like, for instance, one of the recent Ghost Recon games that came out literally 2 or 3 months ago, which was, like, heavily beta tested or not, literally the other week was, like, over 50% off, which says to me the game hasn't sold.
Yeah. and a shift units.
Yeah, they want to shift a few numbers. And a part of me wonders whether that's the same with Project Cars 2, because, you know, I've seen some really big reductions. It's not really been out that long, if you think about it.
I stumbled across it in the local game shop at the weekend. £6, which is about its value, to be honest. But, yeah, I stumbled across it for £6. And like you say, it's not been out that long. And that's a physical copy as well.
Yeah, it wasn't. I mean, you know, in the first few videos that I watched on YouTube complained about the way that the car, like some cars just don't seem to be touching the surface of the track.
Yeah,
and they,
absolutely.
So, which was the scary
thing about the AMS thing, which is what my great
and I don't see and
is.
I don't see like a lot of streamers using it either. You know, it's kind of, it really kind of tells a tale.
It's kind of become the franchise that people love to hate. I think. I mean, let's put our personal opinion is by its very nature subjective. So what I think is great, you might not think is very good, and vice versa.
I mean, a bit like your haircut.
My haircut's wood. I've had it chopped. I've been positively scalped. Because I'm a typical Yorkshireman, I walk past a hairdresser's. Bear in mind, a hairdresser is someone that can significantly alter your physical appearance via your hairstyle. And they had a sale on, so it was like £3 to have my haircut. And the Yorkshireman in me thought, £3, I like the sound of that. And then the realist in me, when I came out, went, where's your hair gone, son? So don't expect a YouTube video off me anytime soon. But I mean, it's kind of subjective for the game, so we'll leave that to one side. But the marketing campaign of Project Cars 1 was very much, this is going to be the ultimate simulation. This is going to blow everything out of the water. It's going to be the best thing, I think, redefining the genre of sim racing, I heard at one stage. You see some screenshots, you think, my God, that looks tasty. You hear the slaver about how good it's going to be. You see the amount of content that's going to come with it, etc., etc. And you think, yes, I'm going to go all in on this one, a whole bucket full of excitement, drop £50 on it, and I didn't like it. I wasn't impressed with the amount of post-release support and the number of bugs it had and all that jazz. So I kind of like thought, bad experience, not impressed. Then the marketing push started again, and as you say, I'll not name names, but some of the more prominent personalities from the studio are quite colourful in their wordage that they use to promote their product. And I foolishly fell for it again and bought the ultimate simulator that's going to blow everything out of the water for £60. And it was just as, in my personal opinion, your own mileage may vary, poor, just as poor and bug-filled and unplayable, in my opinion, as the first one was. So I'm over £100 down, over two games that don't even have installed on my hard drive anymore. It's just absolute rubbish. So I've kind of fell out with the studio anyway because of the product they delivered and the way they marketed it, and they continue to market it. And then the slaver started again for the third installment, all along exactly the same lines, 300% better than the last game. That's just an arbitrary figure you've thrown on to make things sound good. So I think I also feel like much of the community, feels a lot like myself, that we're very dubious about the believability and quality that's going to get produced by the studio. So they're on a bit of a back foot, which, as you say, could affect once bitten twice shy type scenario, could affect sales. So also it could be a very clever marketing move to join forces with a long established and well respected studio that is Codemasters, to partner up in effect with a license agreement with Riser Studios that are absolutely adored in the sim racing landscape, and try and get a little bit of that reflective glory off the respective studios
as
well, maybe.
I think the challenge with Project Cars 2 is it doesn't have the longevity of other games like Assetto Corsa. Because if you look at the Steam charts, for instance, as of like 45 minutes ago, Assetto Corsa had over 4,500 players, and Project Cars 2 is at 1,600. So there's a
huge
difference there.
And that's higher than I expected, to be honest. Because the gameplay is just not satisfying, in my opinion. Again, doesn't
feel
realistic.
And then if you look at F1 2019, currently of an hour ago, you had over 4,000 people playing that. Its all-time peak is just over 9,000. Project Cars 2's peak was just over 6,500.
And I think it's because they know what they are. Assetto Corsa's a simulation. F1 is a simulation of Formula One, but in an accessible fashion. And Project Cars claims to be a hardcore simulation, but doesn't come across that way. So they kind of, fundamentally, there's nothing wrong with Project Cars if I knew what it was going to be. So if it's going to be a Forza or a Gran Turismo for the PC, happy days. Not for me, not interested, but good for you. But it's not. It was going to be everything that's good about R-Factor 2, but with bells and whistles on the top. And it's not by a long stretch of the imagination for me. So a bit of an identity crisis. So maybe it's a little bit of market alignment going on as well. So we've gone off subject a little bit to PCAS bashing, which I apologise about. So maybe it's a bit of a market alignment there. But Paul, moving with Codemasters, what do you think Slightly Mad Studios are going to get out of that arrangement? And vice versa, what are Codemasters going to get out of this association, do you think?
Maybe it gives them access to the licenses that that Slightly Mad Studios have got.
Yeah.
You know, do they want to release a game of that nature to compete with Gran Turismo or something along those lines?
No, that's a good point, because GT, Polyphony Digital and Gran Turismo have got all the money in the world, it seems. They are a massive studio that shift humongous numbers. So
And that's only PlayStation. That's not even not even including Xbox and PlayStation. So, you know, maybe the licenses agreements. But then again, you know, judging by what the comments from Ian Bell have been, is that they're working on the third iteration. So maybe Codemasters want to do what they're doing currently with the F1 Esports and have a game that they can compete with what they're doing with Gran Turismo.
I think you've got a good point there.
You know what? That just came to me as I was talking. I think I've just hit the nail on the head there.
Yeah. I think you've really opened up a good conversation topic, that, because it's a big ask to go against a studio of that size and the Forza with Playground Games for Forza Horizon and Turn 10 for the Forza Motorsport franchise. Massive, massive money, massive development teams, huge licenses.
Yeah, but the Forza series isn't really nailing the esports as well.
No,
as
they stepped away big time.
Yeah, the Gran Turismo, you know, guys are doing. So
because they started off, GT Sport, for those that don't know, started off live, bucking the trend for the Gran Turismo franchise of being exclusively online. And then it's only in later updates and releases that they've started to bring a traditional offline grind, if you like, portion to the game. So they've got like tie-ups with the FIA. They do various other, lots of manufacturers are heavily involved in it as well.
Yeah, the new cars, concepts. I mean, they're getting added, like the Jaguar that got announced a few weeks ago, that's now in the update, the concept cars that they're adding to the game and things. So yeah, it's and now they've got the Lewis Hamilton had a Lewis Hamilton tie-in for quite some time, but with the recent update to Gran Turismo, you can now race against Lewis Hamilton's times that he set in the game. So I'm wondering whether they're trying to kind of replicate that to some degree.
I think you're onto something there. And also, do you think this maybe has any effect on the so far reasonably quiet Madbox, which was the PC and a console gaming device that Slightly Mad were talking about 12 months or so ago? Well, that could be an interesting lead into what that might develop. So obviously Codemasters have access to more resources, staff, finances.
I'd heard
that
being cancelled, so
there was some noise about a few key people had pulled out, etc. They'd lost a little bit of backing and funding, but I never heard a formal no, this has been down the pand. But that'll be interesting, because we're moving to a world where streamed gaming is becoming more and more not commonplace is not the right word, but that's starting to make noise now with the Google products and whatnot too.
Yeah, but it's not. You can't. It's like that's a whole different podcast here, but
yeah, it is. Oh yes,
Stadia has got problems. You think about, like, for instance, I was talking to someone about the other day, and Football Manager is a very very popular game, especially for those who think they could be a football manager. I played it over many, many years. And
yeah, man, I were addicted for that for years, and I don't like football.
Yeah, but the thing is, like, you need a decent laptop or a decent PC to, you know, because it runs, like, the games virtually behind the scenes. It's got lots of data to churn through. And apparently, you know, with the amount of power that is in that Google Stadia, you know, that's one game that I would be interested in playing on Google Stadia. But by all accounts, one moment you the game gives you a rating saying you're 5 stars. You start a new one, it gives you only a rating of 2 stars, like performance-wise. So it's very, very hit and miss at the moment. And also with racing games, for instance, because of the potential controller lag, you know, the reactions and things like that. I just don't think that it's possible. And I'd be very interested to see how the first person shooter elements, you know, go. I like games where you're like SimCity-esque games and things like that. I think it could work because it's single player, or maybe it's multiplayer. You've got different, but you know, the latency and everything else doesn't come into play there for those type of games. I mean, I could do a whole episode on this cloud gaming malarkey. But for me, it's like Google are making people pay to be a beta tester, which for me is just wrong.
Which is new technology to a T, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's just wrong as where you've got the likes of Microsoft who have come out with Project Cloud X or X Cloud, which is kind of like, you know, I potentially could turn my own Xbox into a cloud computer and I could play my games remotely. My brother was demonstrating me a wrestling game with an Xbox controller connected to his Android phone, because at the moment you can only test with Android. And I was blown away by it, absolutely blown away. So it's got potential. There are going to be problems. And also the service is only going to be as good as people's connections as well. So let's not forget that. Whether that be...
Yeah, that's a good point.
Whether that be your actual broadband, physical broadband connection. If you've got fiber, then the chances of you having issues are, you know, are really slim. But if you've got, you know, FTTC, which still relies on copper and everything else, so there's potential to have faults there. It's an interesting concept. I just don't know whether the infrastructure, and also not only that, it's like, for instance, you might have a router with the fastest Wi-Fi chip in it now that's being released and whatnot, but the device, your PC might not, or your mobile might not. You know, if you're running an iPhone 7 or an iPhone 5, they've got different chips in them. So just because your router could do certain speeds doesn't necessarily mean your device can. And it's just a whole world of pain with those things kind of
a multitude
coming.
Of so, variables that can
yes exactly
that
yeah
work.
You know, and a lot of people, you know, who aren't necessarily, you know, technically astute will just shout and swear at something rather than actually try to troubleshoot and understand where the problem may be. So cloud computing's a whole other podcast. I'm telling you.
This feels like episode 1, season 2 material, methinks.
Yeah, so, I mean, seriously, I think it could be a whole episode, like a special podcast. It would be good to get someone who's an expert on it. But, you know, I've watched a lot of YouTube videos. I've read a lot of articles on it, you know, because I'm intrigued by it, you know. Not that I'm going to dive in. I'm waiting on the
it's
outskirts.
It's a potential future tech, for sure. But
it is, because it takes the initial big cost away from the user base.
Which obviously opens up.
But then, how are you going to plug in your Fanatec wheel or your direct drive base and things like that? Like,
telling me that there's no connectivity to the cloud for a USB port for some racing hardware and peripheral activity. All you have to do is buy a compatible box for £699, and you can plug anything in. Anyway, back on topic.
Yes,
for a second. So, in summary, then, dude, it sounds like there's a lot of publicly, at least, unanswered questions about what this merger means for Ultimate Ballista 2, who've got the license for the Slightly Mad Studios.
I think that's more clear than I think we like to think. I think that source code, they've got it, they do what they want. I don't think it's going to cause them any problems. It could open more doors.
I hope so. And I hope this means then that there's maybe some flexibility for... At the moment, Codemasters have a long-term license for Formula 1. But as we've already talked about, they've kind of got the realistic enough to satisfy the likes of us sim racers, but accessible enough for new blood in the door. I wonder if this will open up an opportunity to have another Formula One game in the marketplace that details on the real serious hardcore side. Probably not going to sell that many units, but goes to town on the simulation aspect. That'd be exciting.
It would, but then you're basing that on the, you know, the SMS engine, which I think we could argue is not, is probably about the same level as the Codemasters.
Well, yeah. Maybe. The... I mean, I hear lots about the set of tyre model, how it's supposed to be really, really advanced. I don't think previous games using that engine have maximised the potential in that tyre model. And I mean, we've seen before iRacing have been developing their tyre model for 10, 15 years. So tyre models are probably one of the most complex things in the whole of sim racing, and take a long time to tweak and fine-tune as more data becomes available. But I think, from what I understand, and I've spoken to developers offline about this before, some with more or less knowledge on the subject, it is a good tyre model. It just needs to be exploited to its fullest. So there's definitely potential in there. And I definitely think AMS2 will be the biggest test of how much potential that engine's got. So it's not beyond the realms of possibility to really go down that direction. It's just, have they got an appetite to do that? Do they have an appetite to make a sim racing game, or is this taking them away from the sim racing space and more into the dare I say simcade areas? Are they looking for more? What do they want? Do they want to shift units? Because don't forget, Mario Kart's probably the biggest selling racing game of all time.
Yeah, it is,
so,
yeah.
So do you want to go down that road? Do you want to shift units and make a lot of money? Or do you want to build a racing simulation?
I think it's the time with this all. I genuinely think it's all to do with the esports thing now. I don't know why I didn't think of it before. I think it's the whole time, because you look, like you say, you've got two competing kind of games there. And I can't see them getting taken... The mod, you know, like for instance, so we talk about F1 2019. What did Coastmasters say about that engine? They've been working on it how long before they released it?
Yeah, it's a couple of years. A couple of years they were developing.
I can't see them. I expect that engine to be then used for F1 2020.
Oh, without a doubt, because that's well underway already.
Yeah, but I'm sure you know, they tend to develop. They take an engine, then develop it, don't they? And keep evolving it.
And so the Dirt Rally series, don't forget. Sorry to interrupt. That uses the same engine as well. So there's the Dirt Rally.
I can't imagine them just scrapping that engine and using the SMS engine.
No.
You know, or whether they take both engines and go, right, can we create a new engine from both of them? I honestly can't. I don't see it. I don't see why you would do that. Because you've got two different types of games there. You've got Rally, well, three actually. You've got Rally, you've got F1, and then you've got what Slady Mike Studios, you know, Slady Mike, the Project Cars 2 is, right? Which is an assortment of different cars and tracks and everything else.
And then obviously Codemasters have got the pure arcades as well.
I wouldn't imagine. I mean, I don't know how many of the tracks that Project Cars 2 have that have got F1 races in them. I would think the license for those tracks would be tying into the F1 license and not the tracks themselves.
Yes, they tend to
things
be.
Like that. So I think they're just trying to bring Project Cars under the Codemasters umbrella, right? I think they'll keep them separate. They won't move the studio, and let them do what they want to do, and then they'll kick off a big esports thing. I think that's what they're going to do.
I think, ladies and gentlemen of the podcast audience, Mr. Paul Glover, inspired by his muse, Mr. Paul Jeffrey, the altogether taller and more attractive of the two Pauls.
Taller, I agree with, but attractive, I'm not so sure.
Beauty, my friend, is in the eye of the beholder. My mum says I'm lovely, and that's all that matters.
Your mum says I'm lovely.
Ba-dum-bum-tsh. Oh, I opened the door to that one. I'm a fool not to believe you'll walk through it. But yeah, I think, to be honest, mate, I think that's, you've got a really, really good shout for maybe what this is about. Because don't forget, the Project Cars 2, and you're much more expert at this than I am, have got some real good broadcasting innovations there for TV director side of things. And obviously, graphically, they've got a really on-point simulation. So, that they've already got a lot of the bare bones that one would need for a successful esport platform, but just put the structure around it and Bob's your uncle.
I just think what they need to do in order for that to work is for them to be a little bit more consistent. Because if you look
at the
McLaren Shadow, for instance, you know, they use different games for different types of cars as well. Ideally, you'd want to have Project Cars 2 or 3, whatever they blooming call it, to the cars to be more consistent across the game. So, you know, alluded to before, where people have commented about the feel, the lack of feel of the cars and the tyres and so forth on the, you know, because sometimes the cars don't even look connected to the track, let alone.
But some
feel
of
it.
That you could argue is because of the massive number of vehicles they're trying to bring. Bring a European iRacing out, because at the end of the day, let's just imagine for a moment that we're going for an eSport platform, a European iRacing. You don't need 300 cars. That's counterproductive. You need 12. 12 models, one class. And then do a season or two, then develop another 12 models for another class and build it gradually. As iRacing do, they started off and they just keep building.
Yeah, but that's a subscription model, isn't it? So, you know.
But if it is fundamentally an eSport platform,
and you're not going to get that so much on console. So you've got to remember that. I get where you're coming from, and I get that, but I just can't see that model working, especially the fact that the console users are a big portion of their base.
Unless of course though that you're allowing Studio A, because I don't know which direction it'll go in, but let's say Codemasters SMS. Codemasters can do the offline and online and pick up and play element. So I want to drive on my own in a 50-lap race in a Formula One car or whatever. That can be covered by that side. And then theoretically, maybe the new SMS product could be, this is purely an eSport platform. There's no real online AI, because the AI is dreadful in that game. There's no real AI element to it. There's some practice modules, but there's a massive eSport competition at the end of the month that runs every month with humongous prizes and big organised championships. So it really focuses the user base into a small-ish selection of cars, so they become experts at it. When we first got Assetto Corsa Competizione, and there were a handful of cars, or the Lamborghini, I think, wasn't it? Can't remember now. And one track.
Yeah.
You race online against that, and actually, even in a public lobby, bum, 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 the racing were really good because everyone's driven more than 5 laps on that car and track.
Yeah.
And that's actually artificially a really good way to develop quality racing. And if you're doing a televised or a broadcasted eSport event with a big manufacturer and sponsorship and a big end prize on it, you want dedicated quality people that have really learned the nuances.
I just can't see the console market accepting that kind of model. I think your PC user base is more used to that.
Yes, I think you're right. Actually,
I think it'd be a harder sell to the console users, and not that, because you know consoles now are more like PCs in the way, you know, like whenever I turn on a game that I haven't played for a few months, there was always an update. Though now with my fast internet, it's not such a big an issue. But
fast internet, you swine!
Yes, sorry about that. And it's that low too. I just don't see them going down that model. I could definitely see the benefits of said model.
Here's an idea. You sell the game for a tenner, and then you pay to play. You sell the game for a tenner, the base code game.
That always goes down well with the sim racing community.
But don't forget, this is not the sim racing community I don't think we're looking at. I think we're looking at the wider racing game community and the eSport side of things. So you sell a base game, really low pointer entry, nominal fee. You get it on your console, your PC, whatever. You can do some practicing, some setup tuning, maybe paint yourself a livery for your team and all that jazz. And then you pay X amount of money to enter a competition, but it's got a gargantuan prize at the end of it. And then new content comes out, you pay X amount to access that content and the competitions attached to, and it almost becomes a gateway into what they would hope, I would imagine, to be the one and only one-stop shop go-to online eSport competition platform. Because don't forget iRacing, you pay a ton of money and you own nothing.
Yeah, I know.
And some of their competitions have just winning for the sake of winning. There's no real significant prize at the end of it. It's just a championship victory. Well done, you. Go tell your friends, then they're not interested, and then hang your head, and then do it again. That's an option, maybe. I hope not, because that's got no appeal to me whatsoever. But who knows?
Yeah, I just... I don't know.
You're not convinced.
No, I'm not. I just... It's they want to sell. They want they tend to care about the initial sell.
Yeah.
And I get your angle, and I think you're right. I think if they, like, you know, for instance, with Assetto Corsa Sassoni, as you say, when they released the Lamborghini in the first, you know, everybody got good at the Lamborghini because it was the only car available, and it also means that car is developed to. They can concentrate on, you know, their focus on that Lambo, so any bugs and whatnot. And then as you start to diversify, obviously you take that focus away from that particular car. And yeah, I think maybe, like you say, because Project Cars 2 has so many types of cars in it and many tracks, that it doesn't allow them to apply that focus. But then you could also argue sometimes, you know, they've done it for Project Cars 2, so why can't they just take the base of that and then just make them better for 3?
So I think the answer is, we don't know.
No.
And this has been 50 minutes of pure...
Speculation
based on zero knowledge or fact. And that is the best conversations to have, for sure.
Yeah, I should have got a beer in my hand, shouldn't I? That's what I should have done.
Oh, you've just brought up a good idea that I have no ability to be able to do anything about for this moment in time. Damn so, you.
I just don't have any beers. Anyway, we hope you've enjoyed this special podcast, which I thought was going to be 25 minutes long, 30 minutes
Paul,
long.
It takes me 15 minutes to say hello, so the chances of this...
Well, we hope you enjoyed listening to our Whitley's. We'll create a thread at racedepartment.com when this is released. And so go check it out and let us know your thoughts. And, you know, like that whole esports element, can I just say, that's come to me on my own. I haven't read that anywhere else. So I think that's what they're going to do. I genuinely think now, I convinced myself during this podcast, because at first it was like, I got no idea what this is about. And then as I was just sitting there thinking about it, and then I just in my head went, F1 esports, that's gone really well. Oh yes, and it just clicked, and I think I genuinely think this is what it's all about. I think it's market share.
For the sake of full disclosure, I text Paul that idea ages ago, and he just stole it and used it as his own.
Shut up, did he? and also, I can just edit that out because I have the audio. So
that you don't, you censor me. You censor me to the world. I can censor
you. I can do things like this. Oh my God, Paul, I can't believe you just said that. I'm really sorry, listeners, but I had to remove that from the podcast.
You swine, you.
I can do all sorts to you.
If you think I'm going to play nice next season, you've got to never think coming.
You wait. Thank you for listening, dear wonderful listeners. If you haven't subscribed, please subscribe. Don't forget to check out a racing club at racedepartment.com. Check out our YouTube and Twitch and leagues and our socials. So we're at Race Department on Instagram, Facebook and Twitter. Paul, this has been really good fun. I really like the idea of just getting together and just chatting. I'm not sure how Davide and Danny are going to feel about us just leaving them out.
Yeah, we apologise for that one, chaps. I'm sorry. Yeah.
If you're listening to this, we're really sorry, but we just felt that two of us, it would just work better.
Basically, so. Paul and I wanted to talk about it in something more than a WhatsApp group. So we thought, well, let's just talk about it and record it while we're at it and see what happens.
Yeah.
And here we go. There's a lot less swearing. It's a bit more mature, but we got there. It was all good.
Are you trying to say that David Day and Daniel are potty mouths?
No. It's normally when we communicate, it's man grunting with swears and inappropriateness. So it's nice.
Yeah, and just taking the mickey out of your hair.
Yeah, which we've done anyway, so yeah, it's pretty much a normal conversation. Cheers, man. Appreciate that. Great.
And if you want to, hopefully Paul will get his hair cut just for Sim Racing Expo next year, and he can see what he's on about.
Yes, I will have it done again at the £3 barbers and come away.
£3.
Honestly, mate, that's like the bargain of the season. I was so excited about that. I went and bought myself a £4 sandwich.
Oh my God, a £4 sandwich. Yeah, so you had a sandwich more expensive than your haircut. That's just
it was a
mad
saving.
World.
It was okay. It was a saving, net saving over having it cut normally. So everyone's a winner.
I recently changed place where I get my haircut because it's cheaper. So.
I can't imagine, man. It's a difficult world for the working man. So
exactly.
We need to make our pound last as far as it will go, or euro, dollar, depending on the currency of choice for where you live.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a tough financial world out there.
Or forint. I went to Budapest recently, and they use forint. So for every £1 or €1, it's like 393.7 forint, which I once bought something that cost like $4,000. And it were a packet of crisps. really, really difficult to work that one out as a European. But hey-ho, good fun, beautiful country. If you've not been, go to Budapest. It's gorgeous.
Hey, Paul's getting his job again as for the tourist board. Right, thank you very much, Mr. Paul Jeffrey, for joining me on this another Monday evening.
Thanks, mate. Enjoyed it. Good fun.
And thank you, dear listener, for joining us. And hopefully you've enjoyed the nice surprise of this podcast appearing in your feed. Don't forget to tell your friends, your family about this wonderful podcast. I've been Paul Glover. He's been Paul Jeffrey. This has been the Race Department Special Podcast. Cheerio.